Mike.
Hey, Michelle.
Are you sick of me yet? 3 days in a row?
Are you podcasting or screwing around with old pictures?
Both. I'm doing both.
Those pictures are horrifying.
They're bad, aren't they?
Man, oh man. Like another world.
I know. A lot of time's passed.
Well, Michelle, we're here.
Yep. We are.
Michelle, we're hell.
And that too. No kidding.
Michelle, we're here to do West Coast Project's take on Fargo, episode 4, The Narrow Escape Problem.
Okay. Somebody smarter than me is going to have to explain this one. Could you figure that out, like in layman terms, put it in terms that I could understand?
Well, I can't do much of the biophysics explanation, but it's basically as particles bouncing around inside something, it's harder for it to escape as the opening gets more narrow. And I think our characters are starting to see things narrow down on them, that they're kind of trapped into situations that, you know, they didn't have when the season started.
Right. They've made choices that have narrowed their escapes, their futures.
The loan Emmett took 10 years ago or whatever. The choice of Ray to date Nikki. Maurice getting involved in with whatever he got involved in. I mean, like everybody, right? Our own lives, we have a billion choices when we're one day old, and we have maybe less choices when we're 90 years old.
Sure.
I don't know. Who cares? It doesn't really matter about the biophysics angle. It's like this is the mystery angle of it, right?
And it's definitely a mystery in this one. What did you think about this episode?
It was good. It's pretty good. It's good to see. I mean, we've been in kind of setup mode for a few episodes, and I think there's some payoff like imminent now.
Right.
There's some very confusing things happening.
Right. Right.
I mean, like the whole binging of VM Varga, and we're all kind of binging on technology. Do you think there was some sort of a parallel to that?
Geez, I don't know. I don't know if I'm just like overwhelmed with everything going on right now, so I'm not able to make these connections, or if I'm just not really smart about this, or if there's just so much going on in this episode. I literally watched this episode 4 times, and you're never going to believe it, as I have question after question talking about it.
Well, that's what Noah Hawley's trying to do to us, I think.
It was so different than last week, where we really just focused on Gloria and her trip to Hollywood, and it was so simple. And then this week, we were saying that we, you know, hadn't seen all the other players in this, the Nikki and the Ray and the, you know, Emmett. And then this week, we got them all and then some.
Well, Michelle, I can help. No, I don't know. I don't know why they introduced this new cop. She's pretty cool, pretty fun to watch her. But why do we? She's like Margie coming in from whatever 1990. Why do we need? Do we need a new Gloria? She's fun to watch, but maybe she'll pay off big time. I don't know. It's kind of cool. It's kind of mysterious and funny, I guess.
Yeah, there's got to be some reason for putting her in, right? This Winnie, I think her name is, because that conversation that she has with Cy, I've heard like 4 different places, including watching it with my family, where they said that it reminded them of Marge and Jerry Lundegaard's conversation. Remember the conversation where he runs out of the building after they have it?
Yeah.
And it really was. I mean, it was like very similar, really kind of putting him on the spot and him trying to answer some questions. I don't know.
Yeah, half sentences. He doesn't really answer. He just tries to accelerate the whole end of the conversation. He never takes his jacket off. He sits there inside with his coat on.
Right.
Very nervous.
Okay, so what did you make over this whole Prokofiev theme for this episode?
Prokofiev, Peter and the Wolf?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's how they teach kids about musical instruments, I guess, in the play and the musical. But it was kind of cutish, I guess. I don't know if I had a lot of meaning that I attached to it. I mean, sometimes people are criticizing this Fargo because they lean so heavily on parable and meaning, you know, hidden meaning and symbolic meaning.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it was pretty cool hearing Billy Bob Thornton do the narration of Peter and the Wolf.
Okay, that was really cool. The part where they were comparing the characters to the characters in Peter and the Wolf, I mean, I guess you could make those comparisons loosely.
Well, directly.
But, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, considering that the parable is about, you know, animals, and I don't know, but...
Well, considering that they showed each character as he talked about each person in the play, each animal in the play.
But didn't they, after that, as these characters came on the screen, didn't they play the instrument that was associated with the character?
Yeah.
Like, almost for this whole, not for the whole episode, I don't think, but certainly a lot of it, right?
Yeah, like when Gloria passed Nikki, they had a little clarinet, little loop-de-loop in the, on, the, right. on the pathway up to the office. Yeah.
Right. And I think they did it maybe even with Sod another point or something.
Yeah, they did it with all of them. The guys, yeah. The Mimo and Yuri, they had the, right. the kettle drums.
It was a lot, and it was a lot to follow. I wonder if everybody was able to follow that or if it was more like a subliminal sort of thing after they told the story at the beginning.
Well, I mean, even if you missed it, you didn't really miss anything. It wasn't like that music gave you a clue, a watch out for the wolf. I mean, we all kind of know the wolf is the bad guy.
Right, but that was like this extra little, you know, audio signal of it too, right? Because they had specifically said it. And then as the scenes unfolded, there was like these audio signals of it. And I think this show is really big on that because we see, like, you're always talking about the bells. And a lot of times when they're showing Nikki, you're hearing this little bell thing. I don't know. I don't think it's just her all the time, but a lot of times when they show her, we hear that.
Yeah, it's funny. That little bell thing is funny because we used to call it a jingle bell, but it's almost like now that everybody with cell phones and text, it sounds like a text message.
Yes.
It's a very common, I mean, I kind of look at my phone when I hear it, like, what? Somebody's texting
right.
me.
Right. Yeah. I feel like they're really big on hearing these sounds and, you know, and it brings things to mind. Of course, it's like you're talking about with this Peter and the Wolf story, that's kind of over the top with it, almost cartoonish, right, as far as the sounds go. But,
well, it's whimsical. If you took the Peter and the Wolf plot and you put it on side by side next to this plot, you could probably draw a lot of connections. And I got to be honest with you, I don't think I'm willing to put that much work into it as a viewer and even as a podcaster. I like my surface enjoyment and my surface kind of interpretation of it. Like, I didn't go back and read Peter and the Wolf. I'm sure a lot of people are. I bet you could dive deep into Reddit on this and see all kinds of people going super theory about what each instrument means and how the wolf chases the cat and the cat hides from the grandpa and the hunters, you know, everything.
Right, the wolf eats the duck, and the duck's still alive at the end, and I mean everything. You know, there's like this whole big thing, and I don't really. Well, I mean, I would have definitely delved a little deeper into it if I'd had the time, you know, us trying to do this just like, you know, 24 hours after it came out and having like a life in between and having stuff we have to do, is I just didn't have any time to do it. But there was that. There was also the story of Putin in here.
Yeah.
That I really wanted to learn about that, mainly, I think, because it kind of cross-references some of the stuff that we're doing in The Americans, which I find fascinating. And I didn't have time to do that either, so maybe you can explain that a little better to me,
well,
too.
Well, what does it all matter anyway if a spaceship could come along with a robot with a neutron ray and zap everybody up into, Never Never Land?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know. But we start off this episode, it's just like, you know, all of the other episodes starting, except we have this narration by Malvo, of all people, Billy Bob Thornton, telling us the story of Peter and the Wolf, at least parts of the story. And it's just like you said, when he's talking about the, you know, the duck, he's talking about Ray. And when he's talking about the bird, he's talking about Emmett, and the just the whole thing. And they show it to us. And so it's pretty self-explanatory. We see Ray, he's getting ready, and everything about him is just messier, I took note of, than it was Emmett getting ready in the morning. And Ray is, and he's shaving too. He gets rid of all that facial hair.
And well, we knew this was coming, right? We knew this case of switched identity with what's his name playing both people had to happen, that they would impersonate one another. I don't think Emmett will impersonate Ray ever, but certainly Ray kind of impersonating Emmett was, we could see that 10 miles away.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about it. I really wasn't. I didn't even think about him doing that. And it was pretty cool because it was really neat how he was Emmett, but, and of course he is Emmett, but he looked off. You know what I mean? He didn't look perfect Emmett. He looked off Emmett, like a Ray Emmett.
It was funny that it's the same damn guy, and you're thinking that they're not going to get away with that. It doesn't look like Emmett with the stupid hair, but it's the same damn guy. It's
I know.
It's the way it twists your mind around. It's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, I just thought that was really good. We see Si, and he said, well, what's he doing with the toy cars? Is he just like playing with them?
I had that in my office, I would play with it too, Michelle.
Would you?
50-year-old dude. Yeah, man, that was cool. The parking lot king, he's got to plan out his parking lots, but he was having a little too much fun with it versus like structurally planning or, you know, plotting out dimensions of parking lot spaces. He was actually playing with that little car.
Yeah, I mean, he's like backing it in and pulling it in and all this kind of stuff. It reminded me of my 6-year-old grandson doing it. Really, it did.
It did look pretty fun, gotta say.
It did.
Must
it did,
be
and
a
they
boy thing.
Yeah, yeah, and he had it like all set up with even like the little shops and whatever over at the side. It was pretty cool. But we see that, and then we see Mimo coming in with coffee, and or Yuri coming in with coffee and bringing it to Mimo and all that, and they're going to that back room that Vargas established back there. Okay, this is another thing. The Varga overeating, right? He has this whole huge table full of food, and he's like shoveling it down, and then he's bulimic?
Yeah, I think so.
Why?
I don't know. Keep his nice svelte figure.
That just completely threw me off, and he's bulimic, but he's very neat and tidy about it, meaning that he puts down a towel before he gets before the toilet to refund. It was just crazy. I mean, I had literally watched all that, and I was like, what on earth is going on at that point? And this is also as it's coming on and everything. We go to Gloria. She's driving through the barren, snow-covered landscape, and then the words Fargo come up, which is always cool. Always love seeing that. Okay,
yeah.
Then we get to Ricky. Ray and Nikki headed into St. Cloud, and this is where Ray's dress is Emmett, and Nikki's tell them to go in and get the stamp out of the safe deposit box, which is where she's sure Emmett's put it. And she's giving him, like, the pep talk, right? And she's telling him that they're meeting Bert Lerdsman of Plumbing Supplies later on. And she feels like their ship's coming in. And you can tell he's like, they haven't even planned this out, right? Because he's like, well, I don't have the key.
Right. She kind of had planned that out, though, because she knew that answer right away. Well, you lost the key when you're whatever she said. She just, she knew they didn't have the key. And she was ready, kind of, she had an answer chambered for him when he asked about the key.
Oh, yeah. She doesn't miss a beat with this stuff, right?
And she pulls on all of his mail, coaxing his mail strings by the richest guy in the room is always the boss. Like, you got to pull this off so you can be the big shot, big guy in the room.
Yeah, she's very encouraging. What's the word? Manipulative? I'm not sure.
Yeah, wily. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's leading him astray.
Yeah, she really is leading him astray, and I want to talk about that in a little while and get your take on it.
Well, she can be kind of away from the trouble too. I guess when they were going to steal the stamp off the wall, she was involved in the trouble. She was doing kind of the more dangerous thing in that caper, but in this one, I guess there was no way for her to be involved, but. I don't know. The way she led him into it, like, oh, no problem. Just go ahead and tell him, this is why you don't have the key. This, you know, here's your excuse. Then she just drives off or she waits in the car. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't get the feeling that she is afraid to do this. If she could, I think she would. I think she'd probably rather if she could do it, because I think she has more confidence in what she feels is right. And has, like, no qualms about it. And we see that Ray does. He walks into this bank, and he's all nervous. He doesn't look confident like a man walking into a bank.
Looked like he never had been in a bank before. He's looking around like, what the hell did they do over there? What's that over there? Look, there's a guy at a desk.
Right. He's standing there, like, looking around. And this is where we meet Millie. Now, I did read, because I was trying to find some information on this episode. I was so confused after the first time I watched it. People were unhappy about this portrayal of this female.
Well, she's and more how, nice looking than a brainiac, Michelle.
People really didn't like how submissive and subservient and how she was being treated in there. Because, you know, she didn't know him, and how would she? Right?
Yeah, but still, this females are smarter than males still in this series. That any woman that complains, or any person that complains, like, oh, they're treating women as second-class citizens, the women are the geniuses in this show, and the guys are the dopes. Guys are maybe mean and misogynist sometimes, but I still say women are the smarter side of this equation.
Yeah, I think we talked about it where some people were saying that women are like a force to be reckoned with in this. And I agree and I like that. But the way they had this guy, Bert, talking to her and her cowering, almost like she was being struck by him or something, it was uncomfortable to watch. It was a little over the top, and I guess that tells us more maybe about Buck than it does about Millie. But now this guy Buck that comes down the steps and calls Emmett ES and all that, this is the guy who was in that first scene, episode one, that was sitting in the room with Si and Emmett.
Okay.
So he was the banker. Now at least we know that he was the banker. And he was the one who got Emmett in touch with what's his name? Ermintrude,
the loan arranger.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's a good catch. That's a good reminder, because I never caught the guy's name in the very first episode, and then I never would have ever connected him back to the first episode from him being in this scene.
I finally just I knew I had seen him in this, and finally, after like the fourth watch, that finally clicked with me. But he is all schmoozy with Ray, who he thinks is Emmett, and he takes him into his office, and he's ordering Millie around, get him a cream soda, and you know, all this. So Ray wants to get into the box.
What do you think Swell put the cream soda? Like, that's what, what's his name, wanted the other guy to drink. Or that's what, what's his name? Thaddeus wanted way back in his day at the bar, cream soda.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I don't know.
You don't hear cream soda get mentioned twice in a movie very often.
That's a good, catch. I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know. Maybe it's their favorite drink. I don't know.
Do you think Buck's misogyny with Millie was funny? Was he trying to be funny, or was he just kind of a doofus himself when he says she's more nice looking than she is smart, because she really wasn't very pretty? She's kind of plain looking and frumpy looking. I was almost, I mean, it was funny to hear that. Like, she, you know, she's all looks and no brains, but she really wasn't that pretty.
And she wasn't stupid. You know, she was timid, but you can't know somebody by seeing them just because somebody wants you to. So.
Yeah, but she had a kind of limited. She wasn't going to run that bank one day. You know, she looked kind of, I don't know. She didn't look like a rocket scientist.
Well. Well, right, but they didn't portray her as anything other than like this cowering female, which I don't know. It was kind of hard to watch. They don't have to portray every female to be like the smartest thing or whatever, but that was a little hard to watch. I'm going to agree with that. The yelling at her and the snapping of his fingers and the way he did that. I mean, how much does she make? Because it's not enough.
Yeah, and especially she came all the way down from Bemidji.
Right. Well, yeah, and that was kind of like a neat little nod, wasn't it? So, Emmett Ray wants in the box, but he tells him that he's lost his key. And then this is where Buck kind of goes, well, that's a problem. We'll have to drill it out. And he wants him to wait. And then he turns around. At first, he's like, yeah, okay. And he's like, it'll be about a week. We'll order a key. But he turns around and he sees Millie standing there, kind of like cowered up. And I think it ticks him off at Buck because he's being really nice. And does it? Well, no, she wouldn't know Emmett. So she's not had this interaction with Emmett. But he turns around and sees her cowering from Buck. And so he turns back around to Buck. And he's like, you know what? Just wrap up my accounts. I'm going to take them to Chase. Okay, what was funny about taking them to Chase Bank?
Just the competition.
Yeah, but Buck didn't believe it when he said Chase. He goes, oh, you had me going there for a minute. Like, Chase wasn't an option or something?
Maybe Chase turned them down for the loan that Armin Traub helped them get. I don't know. I don't know that much about Chase. I don't think we heard it either. In the universe of the story.
But then Buck turned them down too.
I think I liked how Ray turned from kind of a dopey, like, actor of Emmett into kind of a good poker player here. He did get some courage or encouragement from seeing this lady from Bemidji get kind of railed on by Buck, so he did get kind of empowered by it, and he turns his crappy hand like, oh, I'm not going to get out of here with anything because I don't have the key, and he kind of plays a power play. It's a gamble. It's a bit of a risk to say, well, all right, close out my account, so I guess I'll move over to Chase or whatever he says, and the guy, it works. The guy folds and gets him what he wants.
Oh, yeah, suddenly the guy's ready to drill. He didn't mind drilling it at all. But, yeah, I kind of noticed that he turned into Emmett. And I'm wondering if Emmett is like that with people, this directive and everything, like Ray was being. Because it felt like, to me, that he just kind of turned into Emmett because Buck wasn't surprised that he was acting like that.
So, yeah, he did become very Emmett-like. I mean, they're brothers. He knows what Emmett probably would do. And he's got Emmett's blood in him. I mean, it's not that surprising, right, that he seemed to look a lot like Emmett and act like Emmett.
Right. But then he's stupid. He does stupid things. Like, he wants 10 grand in hundreds and a buck in quarters for the meter. And Buck tries to tell him that if you take out more than 10,000, it triggers something. And he's just in full Emmett mode now and won't listen to anything at all.
Yeah.
And there is a federal banking rule on withdrawing large sums of cash.
Yeah.
And it triggers, let me see, because I did look it up. It says that the federal law allows you to withdraw as much cash as you want from your account. Of course, it's your money. But if you take out more than a certain amount, the bank must report the withdrawal to the IRS, who might come around to inquire about why you need all that cash. It's a 1970s anti-money laundering law known as the Bank Secrecy Act. And if it's at least $10,000 in general, but it's, of course, it's got all these caveats that if it's, you know, you can't go do $5,000 in the morning and $5,000 at night. And if you do, like, you know, $3,333 Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the bank could also report that or whatever. So that was interesting, and it was something that he should have probably listened to.
Yeah, it's funny how all these great TV shows are crisscrossing and paralleling with one another, because there's a scene in The Leftovers where Carrie Coon carries an amount of money to another country, and it's the same problem. It's really,
oh, really?
It's really uncanny how this comes up and crosses with, you know, same characters too.
Yeah, how can they even do that with this stuff that's literally, like, airing within a week or so of one another?
I don't think they can, because they don't film it a week apart or a day apart, and they don't know what the hell the other guys are filming. It just got to be coincidental.
That's crazy coincidence, though, right? That's just nuts.
Yeah, it's freaky.
It is freaky. Okay, so then Emmett/Ray goes in there, and he's looking through this bag, and it's ashes. The bag says Laverne, right? But it's ashes. He dumps it in the trash and he goes through it and he tastes it.
Yeah, he's an idiot.
Is that like your first inclination if you find a bag of ash is to dip, you know, lick your pinky finger and taste it?
I can't think of anything I would taste to try to identify it.
Not unless it's like a barbecue sauce or something, you know, like to see if it's hot or mild or whatever. Me either. Okay, then he gets back in the car, okay, and he's talking to Nikki.
Well, we got to point out all the silly, you know, nods to the past seasons, Michelle. So the bag says Laverne on it, and Laverne is where season two was held.
Right.
Season two.
Right.
So, yeah, so I don't know what this, and then it turns out these ashes are the ashes of some pet.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. Some beloved dog. Why would you have a dog's ashes in a safety deposit box?
More mysteries, Michelle, for us to ponder.
I guess. Craziness. But he gets back in the car and he says the stamp wasn't there, but he got out the $10,000. And now Nikki here is disappointed. First of all, she's like, oh, Christmas, because he brings out the money. But then she's like, how much money did he have? And Ray's guessing, right? He says maybe $1 million or something. And she says, he's got $1 million and you took out $10,000. And so he goes into this thing about, we're not criminals. I just want what's owed me, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, that's good, although it's still robbery. And Nikki's kind of right, because if you're going to commit federal, I mean, $10,000's got to get you in as much trouble as taking $100,000. So why not take $100,000 or $80,000? Unless he has some element of honor that he's only going to take what he thinks that one stamp was going to be worth.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what it is. It's showing that he wants to be fair, and she wants to rob his brother.
Yeah.
Which really worries me about her.
Well, you know, we all know we can't trust her for anything, or I can't trust her as far as you can throw her. she's got danger and slipperiness written all over her.
Yeah, but I really want her to like Ray and want Ray. Ray completely falls on the sword in this episode for her. And I really want her to be sincere in her affections for him. And I worry about it.
Well, Ray going in and taking $10,000 because his brother owes him $10,000 is not right either.
It's not right, but it's much more just.
There's an element of fairness in it, but it's still wrong. So I get your point. You're right. It's not like he took advantage of every inch he could grab, but it's still wrong. So I guess you're right. Yeah, he's trying to be fair.
Well, I mean, you know, his version of fair anyway. Of course, you can't do that, but at least he could have a reason for having done that. And who knows, you know, Emmett before had made a comment to Cy, I think in episode one, that maybe he should just pay him for the stamp or give him the stamp.
He would have. We've already figured that out. If they would have just been frickin' brothers to each other, they would have hugged and he would have given them.
Right. But Cy was there and Cy kind of put the, you know, stop on that. And so probably Emmett would say, okay, we're square at this point, even though he shouldn't have done it and shouldn't go behind his back and certainly can't impersonate him and all those other, you know, right things. But I don't think Emmett would have made such a huge deal out of it. But I mean, if somebody goes in and takes, you know, robs you.
No, I think Emmett would have done more. I think Emmett would have, after that scene on the benches, I think he would have said, you know what, you take this stamp. And how else are you, why are you riding around in that old crappy car here? Take a little money, get yourself a car. Hey, do you need a job? Can you be my security guard? I mean, he would have become his brother again. I think. Yeah. He wouldn't have just given
maybe.
Him. I don't know. But he wouldn't have just given him a settled amount of money. Like, this settles our financial score, so we're even and friendly. I think you would have. I think there's a lot of room for love between these two brothers, and it's
if being, everybody just get out of the way.
Yeah, all these agents of change and chaos, Nikki and Cy, are the, you know, they're the little finger and varies of this. They're stirring up all the shit that if they were absent, they would have probably gotten along pretty good as brothers.
The only part that I kind of question about that is when Ray went to hug him after their bench talk outside Emmett's house, and Emmett didn't hug him. So I still think you're right, but I don't know if they're telling us maybe not, or at least have a little bit of question.
More a little bit of time. Takes time.
Sure. Well, Cy knows all about what happened, like, I guess immediately, because he's telling Emmett what happened at the bank.
And that's probably because of the $10,000, right? Somehow some alert got sent to their...
Sure. I'm sure.
Unless
yeah.
they check their bank account every 30 minutes.
Well, and they even know who did it, though.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they even tell us how they know that.
Well, you get an alert. You call up. You call Buck. Hey, what's up? And Buck says, well, you were just in here withdrawing. What are you talking about? What do you mean, what's up? And then he's going to know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but see, Emmett didn't call, right? So, well, same story, I guess, even if Cy called and said, hey, we got this alert, and he said, oh, I told you, you know, when Emmett was in here, what? So, yeah, that makes sense. But they even mention Irv, and they mention that about... Cy's bringing up that he's worried about Varga, right, and Irv's death.
Yeah, they're definitely worried about Mr. VMV, for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely tiptoeing around that. Now, this is where Cy says that he wants Emmett to consider meeting the widow Goldfarb. What's the point of that? Do you know?
That's another little mystery they've dipped us in here. She's cash rich, Michelle. We don't really want her as a partner, but she's cash rich. Like she might be a candidate to buy us out of this, but we don't really want to sell to her. Like, what? What the hell? Cy makes it... He makes a very confusing statement, at least to me as a viewer, about this widow Goldfarb perhaps buying them out because she's cash rich, but we don't really want to sell.
Well, he didn't say buy them out. He just said that Emmett should consider a meeting with her. And then Emmett goes, what, to sell? And he goes, no, not to sell. So
yeah, what would the meeting to sell means
be
to,
about?
To sell means to sell the company to her. But no, not to sell. That's the mystery. I don't know. I don't know what the meeting's about if it's not to sell.
Right. I don't either. That didn't make any sense to me. And then Yuri and Mimo come walking out with... They had a briefcase, and I couldn't tell what the other guy had in his hand. Was it like a saw or a lock of some kind or something like that?
I don't know. It was like an alien's headpiece. I don't know.
It might have been. Okay, now we come back from a commercial, and this is where the Putin story, this is where Yuri is telling a story about Putin as a boy and how he wanted to be FSB and he lived in a well and kept a photo and he goes on and on with all this. And what did that story have to do with what we're doing? And do you know that story? Is it even historically accurate?
No idea. I don't know anything about Putin's history. All I can think of maybe is like this whole picture of world chaos that VMVs paints later on. That mm-hmm. Putin kind of rose up from that, from this horrible... I mean, if you think of Peter and the Wolf, it's kind of like a... It's kind of a survival story, right? Animal versus animal, the strong one survives and all that stuff. And here's kind of Putin rising from whatever his poor start in life was. And now VMV is starting to say, like, oh, get ready, the world's going to appear on your door. All the pitchforks are coming out, everything's going to... All shit's going to break loose. So I don't know. I mean, maybe, unless I'm totally missing this, maybe Putin was the guy who's prepared himself correctly, kind of like VMV saying we all need to prepare for this next stage of what the world's going to do.
Okay, that could be part of it, I guess. When you just brought that up, for some reason, I flashed back to, remember Malvo and the Wolf? Yeah. I had forgotten that he was like this, there was like this elusive wolf and stuff that didn't show up and stuff in that episode, in that series, that season.
Yeah, he was the wolf. He was the predator.
Right. That's pretty cool that he was reading this at the beginning and it's about the wolf. Anyway, that just dawned on me. But,
and where were the cremains of whatever was in the safe deposit box or some dog? Like, what was that dog and what did that dog represent?
That's a good point, too. Yeah, I didn't think about that either because they, Cy and Emmett were just talking about that, about how he was disrespectful to the cremains of this dog. But, okay, so Yuri is telling this story and we're flashing back and forth between... We figure out what the truck's for, right? The truck is like their base of operation. Is that what you got out of that?
Yeah, it's VMV's office and living quarters and slave girls in the back.
Right. So, but he's talking about Pravda is man's truth. Istina is God's truth. And Nepravada is untruth, like used as propaganda to influence. And this is the weapon the leaders use. The truth is whatever they say it is. Right. And I think that they were telling that like in the story of like Putin, right? But then we're flashing back and forth and we're seeing Maurice on the autopsy table. And that, man, that was intense. With
Misadventure by appliance, Michelle. That was a bad adventure for old Maurice.
It's not good.
I hope he recovers in time for Halt and Catch Fire.
I don't know. I don't even,
Another podcast on the West Coast Project Network.
Yes, it is. And a fun one, too. That's a fun one. And a good show. They're going to have to, he's going to have some plastic surgery, though. But Gloria's going through his wallet, and this is where she finds the St. Cloud Parole Board business card.
Yeah, with no name on it, right? Just a general office name.
Right. Yeah.
Because I guess they have a lot of turnover there. They can't even put your damn name on it. They just all have the same card.
I guess. And she also finds the missing telephone book page.
Now, what would you use that business card for? Who would, what's that card for? Who carries it and what do you use it for?
Well, Maurice was carrying it because if you are on parole, you have to stay in contact with your parole officer. And maybe they can't call them directly. Maybe they call the front office or whatever, and then they're transferred back to them.
Or they don't want the public to know the names of parole officers, maybe, if it ever got lost.
I don't know. That could be it. Okay, but then we go into that whole thing about these, people that have their own truth that we just heard from Yuri. We go to the scene where the new chief, Mo, is really living this, right? He's got his own idea.
Yeah.
About, he's certainly has his own truth.
It's all about authority and power. Like the ones who hold the guns and have the money have the power. And so if you have the power, that's the way it is. That's the truth. And he's like, well, come on, Gloria, move on to an orderly transition of power. Don't fight this. I'm clearly in charge here. I was in Fallujah with IEDs all over the place, and it was car parts and dynamite. And I knew boys like you in my service, and, you need to snap into line because I have the power. So there's a lot of allegory to power and weak people rising up maybe against power, but they're up against it if you're not the one holding the gun or holding the, like Cy says, not Cy, but VMV says later on, you get money and then you cover your identity and you get two lawyers in each state and, you use your power, you wield power to keep the surging masses away from you.
Right. To make yourself disappear, essentially. But they also talk about that what happened to Maurice's cosmic justice. He met the business end of a Maytag. I mean, it was just, it's crass. Gloria's not going to drop this. And she tells him as much. She's not going to drop it. I didn't like the way he talked to her, but I do like the way she stood up to him. She tries to be reasonable, and he's not reasonable. He has his own truth. He doesn't care about the real truth. He just wants this to end so he can get on to what he wants to get on to.
Yeah. There was a big fight in the forums about this whole conversation with Gloria and Mo. And in real life, even though Mo is an ass, if you talk to your boss like that, you'd probably get fired. You'd probably be like, all right, you can't just walk out of here and continue to do to disregard an order that I gave you. She is essentially, they don't make it crystal clear yet that he's the one in charge, but it sure looks like he is. You can't tell your boss to screw off, I'm going to do what I want to do, and stand up and walk out on him.
Right. You can't, but I don't think, he even mentions here that he wants to get on with the transfer of power.
Yeah.
So maybe the power hasn't been transferred yet.
Well, it's kind of like you elect the president and people don't like it. I mean, common contemporary times, right?
Did that ever happen? Still the
case. Like the guy you don't like won, maybe, but that's the situation. The orderly transition of power. That's how we do things here. So get on with it, Gloria. Do it the way that we do things.
Yeah, She's not having that right there, though.
Yeah. Okay. I like her too. I like that she's kind of little. Screw you, pal. I'm gonna keep looking into this. I like that too. That's kind of what's her name did. Who's
Marge?
Who?
Marge?
The girl, the chunky girl in season two. She was the little girl. She was Hank's daughter.
Molly.
Yeah. She said to the cops, screw you guys, you're idiots. I'm going to keep, and she maybe didn't say it, but she did it. She kept digging and she found the truth when they were ready to give up on it.
Well, this whole story that Mo has come up with is ludicrous. He's talking about him like he's just a drug addict and he was going to find somebody to rob. But she's right. You don't pull somebody's name out of a phone book and go to their house And yeah. it'd be some kind of spur-of-the-moment drug thing. He doesn't care.
The only thing I'll say in Moe Dimmick's defense, though, Michelle, is that they don't have an endless supply of money to just keep investigating and investigating and paying people to do whatever they want. They have other crimes, and they have other things they got to take care of. And the guy, I mean, everybody's equal, everybody's human, but the guy was a drug addict trying to rob people, and he got hit with an air conditioner. I mean, in the whole scheme of things, really, who does care?
Well, right. Well, you know, but they also point out just a little bit later on that this is the only homicide in the last 16 months. So couldn't you afford just a little bit of time maybe to investigate
this homicide? No, you got to put parking tickets on cars.
Oh, okay.
By the way, wasn't Molly's boss Bob Odenkirk to buy into our theory of like all this? Maybe just all these actors are just so good that they're in all the best shows have the best actors, so that's why all these paths are crisscrossing. But the chief that Molly clashed with was Bob Odenkirk because he was kind of a dope.
What do you mean he's Bob?
Bob Odenkirk was the chief in season 2 of Fargo.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you lost me there for a minute. Yeah.
And now he's Better Call Saul.
Yeah, right. And now we've got Nucky's brother being the chief. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, Shea Whigham.
Right, and him, and then we've got, what was his name? The guy playing Cy. We've said that before, too. He was also in Boardwalk.
Right.
Anyway, crazy. But... okay, this is where Gloria goes into the parole office headquarters where she tries to. She is completely invisible to everything in there. She finally gets her way in.
Yeah, she passes Nikki and we hear the clarinet or whatever the cat is.
Right.
Cat is the clarinet, yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering why Nikki was coming out of... at first I thought it was like a library or something. Then I thought, no, okay, I see why she's coming out. It was kind of funny, though, that Nikki was coming out and then she was immediately on the phone with Ray. So I thought that was funny. But Gloria wants to meet with Maurice's parole officer, and he's busy at the moment, so she goes to the bathroom. She can't get anything in there to work. The soap dispenser, the water spigot, the hand dryer, nothing works for her. And then this is where we meet Winnie. And she's in the stall, and she's needing some feminine hygiene products.
She's cranky as a female dog since breakfast, Michelle.
Well, okay.
Too much information. Some TMI there on the baby-making procedures, though. I didn't need to hear all the... I don't think Marge or whatever, Gloria did either.
She just came out of there, and she just wanted to tell her everything, right? She's talking about how they're trying to get pregnant and the positions that they're trying to get pregnant in and why they're using those positions. And this is the first time she's met Gloria. So that was...
she tries to shake her hand like fresh out of the bathroom stall.
Right. And Gloria holds her hands up like, no. And at first I thought Gloria was holding her hands up because she couldn't wash her hands. And I thought, no, that might not be it. But she's investigating, coincidentally, the hit and run that Cy did in the diner parking lot where he ran over Ray's Corvette and the waitress's station wagon.
Yeah, more importantly, the waitress's station wagon.
Right, much more importantly. And she's impressed that Gloria is investigating a homicide. She gets real serious, and then she goes, oh, well, happy trails. I mean, it was just
funny.
She's
impressed by it. Ooh, homicide.
Right.
It's funny how their paths are very related, though. They don't even realize it. And it's still kind of mysterious to me as a viewer why they needed Winnie to come in and not just have Carrie Coon figure this stuff out. But maybe it was, I don't know, maybe too much of a stretch to have another crimes investigator fall into the lap of Carrie Coon. They had to cross paths in the bathroom like that.
Okay, well, the... diner thing was in St. Cloud. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then the homicide was in Eden Prairie.
Yeah, Winnie's a St. Cloud officer.
Right. So maybe that's why, is that somebody else would have to be investigating that hit and run, because they wouldn't have put that on Gloria.
Oh, right. Yep.
So maybe that's why they crossed paths. But Ray is talking to Nikki on the phone, and they're talking about getting the deal. And he's whispering. She's like, okay, have you ever seen, like, situations where somebody's on the phone with somebody and somebody's obviously, like, saying something private or tender or romantic or something to somebody, and they're trying not to respond in front of people?
Yeah.
But they feel like they kind of have to. Anyway,
Just tell her you love her. Like, guys do that all the time. Like, you try to whisper it below the level of audible.
Oh, really? And guys will say that?
Yeah, guys kind of tease other guys about that.
Yeah. But Gloria walks in, and this is where she noticed that Ray's last name is Stussy. And Ray's, like, blown, oh, that's a very common name. I've got many cousins. Don't know if he's one. Maybe he's one. Who knows? And Gloria's saying that, you know, telling him the whole story. He drove the 30 miles. Everything that, of course, Ray already knows. Took his address out of the phone book. Searched the house like he was looking for something. And this is where Ray said, well, he liked his reefer. Couldn't stay clean for his pee test and all that kind of stuff. And then he gets up to show her out. He's saying he doesn't know anything. And, of course, she hands him her business card. And he calls her chief. And she says, well, for now. And then Ray says they're always trying to screw you, and she says they try.
Yeah, there's a lot of early acceleration of meeting endings in this episode. A lot of Jerry Lindegaard oration of conversations. Okay, then. All right, then. All right. We'll have HR get a hold of you in the morning, then.
Like, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
They both do it. Ray does it, and then Cy does it.
Right. Well, and we've seen Emmett do it in the last, not the last episode, I don't think, but the episode before that. Emmett's, you know, so did you come in here for something? I mean, just, you know. So then we see Gloria, and she's walking outside, and there's a note on her car. Now, what's up with the note?
I don't know. It's from Winnie that just says, you got a lucky license plate number. I'm going to play those numbers in the lottery. I don't know what the hell that means.
I know. I know. And I'll split the winnings, of course. Good luck with your homicide, !
Just friends? Just Winnie needing a friend? A contemporary that she could talk to? Because they are essentially bookends of each other, right? They're both female cops about the same age. Winnie's a little more gregarious than Carrie is, but she's friendly and, you know, they kind of hit it off in the bathroom. She's open enough to ask for, like, feminine hygiene products. And when those don't get produced, she just says, stuffed 100 pounds up in there. Like, she's totally connected to Gloria. So, I don't know. Maybe she just wants to be her friend, needs a friend.
How would she even, well, I guess it's the police car. I started to say, how would she even know that's her car? But, okay, that makes sense. I feel stupid.
Yeah, well, and the police car from wherever Gloria is, yeah.
Right. Well, back inside, Ray's leaving for a home inspection when Scotty calls him in. And the deputy director's in there and tosses him a file, and it's all those pictures of him and Nikki. Now, that's at Emmett's party, right? His anniversary party.
So, do you think this is the work of VMV or Cy? Because Cy's right outside ready. I think it's VMV.
No, this is definitely Cy. Cy said he was going to do it.
Yeah, but...
And he's waiting outside for it to happen. This is definitely Cy.
All right.
Definitely, definitely Cy. Cy, he promised it was going to happen, and then he's waiting outside for it to happen.
Yeah, he gives him pointed finger.
Right, like, I got you, you know. Now, they start doing this thing where they say, you swore an oath, and he's like, what? And he's like, well, you swore an implied oath or whatever. It's pretty funny. And Scotty, man, he is just so misogynist, right? Misogynistic. It's just,
yeah,
you know, don't bang the cattle.
You could fry bacon on that swango, skank.
And there's probably broken glass down there anyway, and it's against the law. I mean, it's just awful. It's awful. But
The only one you could laugh at without getting in trouble from your female friends is you're in a shitstorm and we got the umbrella. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, they're offering him a way out of this.
It's not a very pleasing way out, though. It's just like, okay, you could be fired and you're free from it versus, what, going to jail or worse?
They said if you'll just say that it was a one-time thing, that you lost your mind, then we can, like, suspend you and slap you on the wrist. And he won't.
Yeah, then they're gonna work her if they do that.
Maybe. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe they would, but they don't say that at this point. Ray's looking at the photos and he just, like, you know, he breaks down in front of these guys. He's like, I love her. And then incredulously he says, and she loves me. He's like, look at this woman. She loves me.
Yeah.
And we're getting married. We got big plans. And he goes into all that. And they say, well, not if we revoke her. You don't. So I think that he could have just said it was a one-time thing. It's over. He would have gotten suspended and she would have been left alone. But if he was going to try to keep his job with this, then they were going to put her in jail.
Because somebody the price has to be paid somewhere. If it's not you, Ray, it's her.
Well, and they say the rules aren't just for them. It's for the cons, too. And, of course, they go into the fact that, you know, she can use her womanly wiles to manipulate.
Well, that's not what they said, Michelle.
No, that's not what
the misogyny has not ended in this scene. They say they use their poontang to hoodwink and bamboozle. That's what they do, like all women do. They use their sexuality to get whatever they want from us stupid men to bamboozle us. That's what they do, those wily women.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they ask your question, Mike. They say, what if she's manipulating you? Which was your question at the very beginning.
What do you mean, my question?
Well, you said, is she manipulating Ray? Is she just doing this to use him? Yeah. And they actually ask him the same thing. What if she's manipulating you?
That's still kind of up in the air. You think, oh, she really does, like, oh, maybe not. That pendulum has swung back and forth a few times, and I still don't know where it's going to fall.
I still want to believe that she cares about him. I need to believe that in the story, but I worry, and every week I worry just a little bit more.
Well, you wanted the air conditioner to Miss Gordon, too, but it didn't.
Okay. Well, then Ray says to punish him, he falls completely on the sword, but she's not a criminal. Her problems are in the past, and so they say, okay, you got 10 minutes to clean out your desk. Because he like implores them not to send her to jail. And they're like, okay. And he's happy with that. He's like, yes, sir, clean out my desk. Yes, sir.
And you're going to sign something that says you're, yeah.
Yeah, for wrongful termination. And then he's walking out with his cardboard box of desk belongings. And there's Cy standing outside that Hummer pointing at him. And Cy tries to be cool as he gets into the Hummer, like continuing to look at him and open the door, and he can't get it to work. Then he's locked the vet wheels.
Yeah, it's the Denver boot. Have you ever seen those in real life?
I have seen them.
They're all over, like, Chicago. You don't pay your parking fines and stuff.
So he was not having a good day.
Which site would probably have access to as a parking lot magnet, right? You probably have a warehouse full of those boots that where people don't.
Sure. Well, then we go to commercial. We come back. Cy is walking back into work, we assume, you know, after this meeting. And Yuri and Mimo are sitting in the waiting room, and so is Winnie, the officer. Winnie Lopez. Cy walks in and he makes it very known that he did not call the police. He's going on and on because they're giving him like the stink eye about it. But she introduces herself and says that she's from St. Cloud Metro and she's investigating the automobile thing with the driver of the Humvee registered to Stussy Lots did damage to a car. So they walk into Cy's office and they have this conversation, but it's not much of a conversation. Sai's saying it's a waste of time. The plaintiff isn't interested in pressing charges because Ray wasn't going to press charges. But she says, well, that's plaintiff number one. Plaintiff number two is mad.
Right.
And she's asking him if Ray Stussy is related to the owner or the name on the marquee. And Sai won't even answer that. Why is he not answering anything?
Well, he wants to get rid of her.
Yeah, but she's going to, I mean, that's not hard to find out.
Yeah, it's all kicking the can down the road till tomorrow. He's not getting away with anything. What was Jerry Lindegaard going to get away with? He ran, he knew he had, I need just 10 minutes. Give me freaking 10 minutes and I'm out of here. That's kind of what Sai's doing. He's not got any real long-term solution here. He's just moving it away from him for the minute that he can. I like how Winnie was super friendly and patient and, because she knows she's like
positive.
She's like, okay, I gotta check with HR. Okay, like I'll wait. Mm-hmm. She was like really, really funny to watch here and really powerful. I love how women get the best of these idiots. It's fun to watch as a guy, even.
Well, Sai starts saying that it looks like an insurance matter, but she said the fact that the driver left the scene of an accident made it a police matter. But he stands up, ends the conversation, you know, it's like, am I talking to myself? And she leaves, and as she leaves, Mimo and Yuri are staring a hole through Sai. Did they think it was something different, or were they just being intimidating, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. They probably don't like police being in the building, and maybe they don't know what it's about. And we hear VMV later on say, hey, is this going to be trouble? Is that going to be trouble? Like, they don't want their little operation to get the boat rocked and some idiot going out in his Hummer and running over waitresses' cars and getting police attention is not very good. So, I don't know. I mean, they're maybe just observing it with a giving them a kind of a stink eye for having the police in there for some stupid reason.
Right, and like letting him know that they are going to be watching for that kind of stuff.
And then Sai calls somebody, but we don't really know who, right? Or is that just a fake call to get rid of Winnie a little faster?
No, I felt like he got on the phone with somebody. It would seem like it was after she was completely gone, okay. But I don't know who. Then we see Ray, and he's sitting in a bar with his box and a sad, you know, well, Christmas tree in the background that's sad because it's festive and it looks out of place with him and where he's at and how he's feeling. And he's doing this in place of meeting with Nikki and the Lurdsman guy.
Yeah, why? Why do you think he bailed on that? Because Nikki cost him his job?
No, I don't think so. Do you?
Well, why? Okay, he just lost his job, so he lost his income. His next income is getting a sponsor for a stupid bridge team. Why miss that meeting?
Yeah, that was definitely not smart to miss that meeting. I didn't feel like he did it because he was mad at Nikki. I felt like he didn't show up, and I don't know why I felt like this, but because he was ashamed to face Nikki and tell her what happened.
That's a good take. He's lost his manhood a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's so big on, you know, being the boss of the room and portray yourself this way and all that kind of stuff. And here he is with his little cardboard box of belongings and, but it really put her in a bad situation, sitting there talking to the sponsor and making excuses.
Yeah, he's not going to ditch Nikki forever, though.
I mean,
what you do is you go to the meeting, you pretend like you're a superstar bridge player. You know, you maybe don't tell Nikki for a day or two, pretend to go to work for the next couple days or whatever until you figure it out. But you don't have to miss the important meeting.
No, I agree. But he doesn't always make, like, the best choices.
Oh, come on, Michelle. I can't have you badmouth Ray.
Badmouth your friend Ray. Okay, then we see VM Varga walking up to Emmett's beautiful house outside. Now, Emmett's finally getting a little bit of a backbone with him. I think Emmett might be being cajoled a little bit by what he's saying. But
this
Emmett
is freaking hysterical. Emmett got mad at Ray, right? Because it was 10:30. It's 10:30. Then he's mad at VMV. It's dinner time. Like, anytime you come to that guy's house, he's mad at you.
Yeah. It's lunchtime. He didn't like it. Right. Right. But VM Vargas says that, you know, their first meeting didn't go so well. I just want to make you rich. And now this is where Emmett says he's already rich. Look around you. And this, and Vargas says, no, you're not.
Yeah.
So, okay. What did he mean by that?
Well, that's that world, the world in revolt measurement of rich. You need two lawyers, one in Montana away from everybody, one in the big city if you need him. You need to escape from public scrutiny. You need all these things to be rich. You might have a nice house, but the horde, the screaming horde with pitchforks will take this away from you in 10 minutes. You're not prepared. I think being rich is being prepared for the chaos that's about to swarm over everything, according to VMV.
Yeah, he talked about a couple things. We'll get to it in a minute. I'll ask your opinion on that, too. But first they sit down and they have dinner with Stella. And now, is it Emmett's? I'm going to have to assume it's Stella's mom. Because if it were Emmett's mom, Ray would be visiting, too, maybe.
How are you, young lady? Yeah, he's funny. This whole thing is freaking hilarious because Mrs. Emmett, what is that, Stella?
Stella!
Yeah. She loves him. She loves him. She loves VM Varga, the biggest problem in the world for Emmett. Are you
English? Yeah, so they're not making her very smart.
No, that's true. I'm a citizen of the world.
Right. Are you perhaps English? You know, he's like, what was your first clue with his accent and everything? I'm a citizen of the world. He's bragging, though, on Emmett to her, right, which is a pretty good psychological game, right? Because she's sitting there like puffing up, oh, this is my husband who's doing this. And, you know, and he's like, I'm bringing this opportunity. I want to be in business with him. And then this is our
eponymy here, right, Michelle? This is the title, The Narrow Escape. He's painting a Emmett into this corner that, oh, he's such a good partner. I admire him. I'm so lucky that we're in business together. I even have the paperwork for our next deal. He's eliminating the choices that Emmett has to say to Stella that this guy's a crook, man. I got to get away from him. He's causing big trouble for us.
Because what can he say to Stella now without telling her the whole truth?
Right. So I think the choices are limiting down and down and down, and he's going to be microscopic pretty soon.
Well, Varga goes and refunds the dinner, and while he's retching in the bathroom, Emmett's upset over the paperwork.
Well, and it's funny that he asked for the WC, and she's like, what? The crapper, yeah. Stella.
It is funny, and it's funny how direct, you know, I mean, the feminine hygiene products and what they were calling those and the baby-making positions, and it was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's a lot of excretion in this series. The vomiting, the feminine hygiene, the piss tests. We haven't seen any pooping. Where were we talking about? It was in the Americans, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
But who knows what's coming next?
Yeah, so you guys, if you are missing more body, if you need more, check out the Americans. But, okay, so they're in Emmett's study. Tell me about this conversation that he's having. He's talking about six-year-old boys with Glocks, and they're living in the age of refugees. Everybody's buying houses they can't afford. He's talking about how Emmett's the 1% and they're going to come after the 1%. And then he goes into this thing where he says he wears a cheap suit and a secondhand tie because he's smart.
Yeah. We've been talking about it all through the episode here. The Congo will rise. People make 6 cents a day. The favelas, the six-year-olds with Glocks. People in the streets, refugee world in chaos, 80% of the wealth, 1% of the people own 80% of the wealth. He's showing that the world's going to revolt, and Emmett, like, thinks he's set, because I'll just charge for the parking when the world goes crazy.
But what's the purpose of that? This is not his real mission, Vargas, right?
No, I think he's. I think they're doing a couple things. They're painting the parables of like the one species consumes the other, the whole Peter and the wolf thing, and you know it's like you got to do this deal with me because I'm the predator. And I'm setting my, I mean, VMV might actually believe this in some insane way that he's got a, that having $1 million isn't enough. He needs $1 billion to protect himself from this chaos that he believes is coming. I don't know. I mean, he says you got to do two things. Number one, accumulate wealth. And number two, use that wealth to become invisible.
Right. But he says, action item number one is the accumulation of wealth. And then he says, not money.
Yeah.
He says that, not money. So he's viewing wealth maybe as power?
Yeah, as survival.
Security?
Skills.
Okay.
Yeah, assets that help you survive, like maybe probably a house in the mountains. And like we were talking about, the two lawyers and the being invisible to everybody. And that's why I have a cheap $200 suit and a used tie. And I live in a semi truck. Nobody knows where I am, and I'm, you know, I'm cheap. Nobody knows how much money I make. I launder all my money through your business, by the way. But yeah, he's a ghost. He's not going to be trackable.
But at the same time, what is the point of wealth if you're wearing a cheap suit and a secondhand tie, unless you're a philanthropist or something? I'm not saying that there's nothing else to do with money other than blow it on yourself at all. But I'm just saying, if your whole goal is to hide the money, then what's the point of the money?
I don't think the goal is to hide the money. I think the goal is to not appear to be the 1% that the whole world's going to want to get their revenge against. And I think the real question here, Michelle, is what is VM Varga's motivation? I don't think it's just to get money and to be wealthy. I think he probably somewhere, to make him more interesting, he has to probably believe this, that the end is near and the world is going to revolt in his mind. And he needs to build this buffer of reserves to protect himself from it. Because there's no point in convincing Emmett this. So what? So okay, Emmett starts to believe him. Yeah, you're right. That doesn't really help VM Varga. He's going to do what he wants anyway.
Well, yeah, but how much easier would it be to have somebody who's not fighting you every step of the way, or somebody that you don't have to watch, or somebody that you kind of get deep enough in your minutia that they're culpable as well?
Maybe, but they've steamrolled Stoopsies and Psy here pretty thoroughly. There's not much resistance to, they're doing whatever they want.
Well, he tells Emmett that he needs to insulate himself and his family, and Emmett starts to call Psy. And see, this is where he starts playing a mind trick on him. He's like, I thought you were the boss. Yeah. And we've already had the little conversation where Nikki said to Ray about the boss is the richest guy in the room.
Right.
So I thought that was like a little touch up on that, but he hangs up the phone. So it really feels like he's making an impact on Emmett in one way or another.
Yeah, he wants him. He probably, I mean, I don't know, crazy people. Is VMV really crazy, or is he whatever he is? He wants Emmett to believe him and to start thinking his way. But he's dropping all these parables, like all the feuding of brothers in the Bible. And I don't know, it's pretty mysterious why and what, but there's clearly some buffer of wealth that he wants to build up because he's either faking it or he believes the world is going to somehow revolt pretty soon. And
I don't know that I believe that he thinks that. I think this is just his ploy. I think we see that he has read the emails and looked up everything, and he's listened to phone conversations, and I think he's maybe found Emmett's weak underbelly, and he's poking that. I picture VM Varga to be the person who is malleable and can change to whatever he knows he has to be to get you.
Maybe. He doesn't have to go to Emmett's to give him the paperwork to look at. He could do that in the morning. But so he does kind of see Emmett in front of his family to paint him into a harder position to escape from.
Right, right. But this is where he brings up the stamp. He even knew about the stamp. And now that freaked me out just a little bit, of course, until they showed what he was, how he had found that out.
Yeah, that's why I'm questioning how the photos, although Cy being there in the parking lot smirking does portray it a different way. But that's why I wondered, like, okay, who took those photos of Nikki and Ray? Because VM Vargas, they show him doing all this research. He's tapping phones. He's looking on Google for all this background on Ray and Cy and all this. He knows all about them before he probably even gets to the country. So he knew about Ray. And then he asked Ray coming up if he's going to be a problem. So he knows all about Ray and he knows all about Nikki.
So there's, right, right. So there's going to be a problem with Varga and Ray is what I think they're funneling this for.
Probably to the point where Emmett will have to decide to protect Ray or throw him under the bus.
Or where Ray will have an opportunity to protect Emmett in some way.
Maybe.
From Varga. I don't know. I just think that there's definitely going to be a clash between Varga and Ray. And maybe Varga and Nikki, or who knows what Varga... I mean, you know, we already know that Varga is no stranger to throwing people off a building. And, you know, if he goes after Nikki, I don't know.
Yeah, throwing people off the building that have a proclivity to use electronic devices to beyond their understanding of their power. And the only person exempt from that is Gloria, which is pretty super interesting to me. She seems to be under the radar of all electronic computers and all this other, even dryers in the bathroom.
Good point.
I also thought it was interesting. They talk about the stamp that was on the wall. He even knew that why it was valuable because it was a 2-cent stamp and the two was backwards. Like,
right.
It was, like it was a misprint. He knew that degree of intimate details about Ray's or Emmett's office space. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah. How could he know that?
He had video. He had somehow his camera on his laptop or something. He could see into Emmett's office.
Okay, that makes a whole lot more sense.
I think. I mean, how else do you know where the stamp on the wall hung on the wall?
Well, I don't know unless he overheard them talking. Remember, Nikki was talking to Ray in the car about, but I don't know how he would have that bugged or whatever, about the donkey on the wall that was hanging.
Well, anybody that has a cell phone technically has a bug in your, you know, you turn on the microphone.
Yeah. But he tells them that he went to the Minnesota Trust this morning and they've agreed to increase Emmett's credit $35 million. And he's now in the billionaire business.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
I'm your guardian angel.
All we hear about that.
Pitchfork peasants are coming in with death in their eyes, and I'm your guardian angel.
Yeah.
He also in this meeting, Emmett starts out at his desk with VMV kind of sitting as the guest, and that as the scene closes, VMV's behind the desk, and Emmett is out in the visitor seat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like he swapped roles, like power positions with him.
That's a good catch. I didn't notice that. Okay, then we see Gloria sitting at her kitchen table looking over the parole office card and the stories being told. At this point, it's like boys like Peter aren't afraid of wolves, which was kind of neat at that point. Nathan's trying to get her attention. He says it's time for bed. She tells him to brush his teeth, but isn't he like 15?
He doesn't look that old.
Now, I think she says he's 12, actually. I think she said that in this. But she goes in the bedroom. She takes his phone. She tucks him in. And about this time, somebody comes knocking on the door. And, of course, it's Minnie. And this is where Minnie goes into her whole story about what all she's found out and how, you know, Stussy owns the rental car that bumped into the other Stussy. And then she looked at the homicide that Gloria was doing because it's the only one that's happened in 16 months. And what do you know? There's another Stussy.
Yeah, she says it kind of funny. I don't know the words, but it's essentially the she's connected the car victim to the air conditioner victim's victim.
Right.
Something like that. It was funny.
Yeah, well, I'm right. It's a Stussy, and she's connected that.
Did you talk about the, I missed this because we were talking about so many different things, but the, is your brother going to be a problem, and what about the girlfriend? And then he says, he's a loser, so what else could she be? Like, they both,
yeah.
They both have to be eliminated. They don't play a role, they don't play a part in this party I'm setting up. Like, they're both losers. Maybe he needs somehow, maybe VMV needs, I don't know why though, it doesn't seem like he needs anybody for anything, but maybe he needs somehow Emmett to get Ray. I don't know.
I think he was, I don't really understand what he was worried about with Ray. You know, we kind of touched on it, but we didn't go through all that. That was like a little painful thing. I felt like it was painful for Emmett to say that Ray was a loser. But maybe he was saying that to protect Ray, too. Because, I mean, you wouldn't want anybody that you really cared about to be named by this guy.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like there's a lot of mysteries now. Winnie's kind of important now. Winnie and Carrie Coon are together, are pretty likable, so they're going to care about each other somehow, you think. They're not just, Winnie's not just going to go back home to St. Cloud, you don't think.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it is setup mode, though. I mean, there wasn't a lot of, I guess you could say the story got moved ahead a little bit, but it more got set up for what's about to move it ahead than actually seeing things get moved ahead.
Right. Well, and there was just so, I mean, it was like an episode, it was a information heavy episode. There was a lot of information in this and a lot of information hinted at, not necessarily told, but hinted at and told in parable. So you can kind of draw a bunch of conclusions to it. Next week is called The House of Special Purpose. And we see Nikki saying to Ray that she wants to make a sex tape. And then Ray is disgusted with the idea of blackmail. Gloria and Winnie are telling Donnie the story about everything, about, you know, the Stussies and all that. Ray is screaming at Emmett on the phone. VM Varga is telling Cy that they know he spoke to the police yesterday. And Cy is whispering on the phone that it's worse than he thought.
Yeah.
So... teasers, but nothing.
So, The House of Special Purpose is a novel about the Russian Revolution and the fate of a family within the Russian Revolution. Part love story, part historic novel, part tragedy. Illuminates an empire at the end of its reign. The Romanovs. So, that's kind of what Mr. VMV's predicting here, the end of a empire with the proletariat rising up, the poor masses rising up with pitchforks.
But when he first come on scene, he was telling Emmett, you're going to be rich on the books anyway, richer than you ever dreamed. Then he goes on paper. I don't feel like he really has any goal of making Emmett more wealthy. I think this whole thing is like a parasite just to suck Emmett, get anything he can off of Emmett until Emmett goes down.
Yeah, the only thing that complicates that is he could be that predator sucking the blood out of this host without needing to communicate with him at dinner and without needing to impart all this wisdom and religious meaning and, you know,
convince his wife. But we saw this kind of thing with Malvo, right? Like the cat toying with the victim.
Yeah, it's almost like the goal of the predator is to convince the victim that they're better off for having met the predator.
Yeah.
For some reason. even though you don't have to, a wolf can just kill a little bunny rabbit. It doesn't have to tell it it's better off because it's about to die.
Well, right, and it doesn't have to toy with it and, you know, take it back to its family and show its family and, you know, get its family on the wolf's side. I mean, there's all this different stuff. It seems cruel what they do.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy, man.
I'm definitely getting a Malvo feeling from Varga now more and more with all the nuances of this toying with people.
So you're saying Tom Hanks is going to come by and shoot him on the couch? Not Tom Hanks, Tom Hanks' son. Huh. What's his name? Dylan Hanks or something.
Not Dylan. I don't know.
Hank? Hank Hanks?
I don't think it's
Colin.
Hank Hanks.
Colin Hanks.
Colin. Now, is it Colin?
Colin. Whatever. I think so.
I gotta look, because now I gotta know.
There's a secret thing that happens in this novel, House of Special Purpose. It's not just the end of an Ozymandias, end of an empire. I'm trying to read through, and I've never read the book, so I don't know what that is. And I'm not prepared. I didn't prepare. I just started looking it up as we were talking.
There is so much information. Literally, we could have spent a solid week, like, as a job, looking up this stuff. You're right, by the way. It is Colin Hanks. That didn't sound right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty good, though. So, these are fun to do, but, like, I like finding answers when I do podcasts. Like, okay, this is what this means. Now that means that. And so this is going to happen next. But you're not able to do any of that crap in Fargo.
No, you're really not. A lot of it, so much is left open to interpretation.
Some people don't like this season because it's so much like that. It's like this is the third year that it's been like that. Like, oh, this parable and me, you know, it's like... They all just look the same, all these three seasons, the same sneaky, mysterious stuff that you have to figure out parables. And I don't know. That's kind of why I watch it, though. That's why I right. like it.
Right. I love the show. This week, I probably brought my own baggage to it this week just because I've got so much on my mind already that this episode felt very overwhelming to me. So... it's probably just me, maybe, about this episode. Episode 1, 2, and 3, I was just ecstatic with it. I'm with you. I love that we get the completely different stories, but the same, like you said, I think, quirkiness or whatever.
If you look at the last episode, the robot just turns his switch off and turns himself off because he's told to. You know, is that the goal of the massive master power survivor of the revolution, that you can just tell people to turn themselves off and you, boom, you won. I'm the winner now. Is that VM Varga's role in this? He's going to tell, because that was his voice, right? Didn't he tell the robot to turn himself off?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Why do you need to do that? You know, why do you need to be friendly before you tell them that? Why not just do it? Why not just take control and... stamp them out if you don't want them around.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like you said, many more questions than answers in this episode.
It looks like it's coming up to a battle between Gloria and VM Varga, though, because she's not affected by technology, and that's his avenue into people, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. But, I mean, I don't know how. I don't know how it could, you know, how those two, I'm not drawing a straight line between those two.
I don't know. He'll have some sensor or something around his semi-truck or something, and she'll walk up and she won't alert the sensor. Who knows? Well, who knows why?
Yeah. Yeah, she won't show up on his radar, will she?
Yeah. Something like, they gotta be that. She won't make the door open and the automatic door... you know, magic eye. There's got to be the payoff to that.
There's got to be something. They don't leave this stuff, right?
No, they don't set it all up this way for no reason.
Right. Okay.
All right, Michelle, well, anything else for 304?
I think I'm talked out of 304.
It always seems like there's more to say, and we always end up like at least an hour and a half into these podcasts. Sometimes you go 30 minutes and it seems like, oh, I can't think of anything else to say. There's like you could just keep talking and talking about this stuff.
Oh, I know. I know. Literally, this could be like a 3-hour podcast. No kidding. Because if you really wanted to dissect everything that they brought up, like really relate it to the story, the Peter and the Wolf story, and really relate it to the Putin story and the biblical references that he brought up. I mean, you could really spend some time researching this and get, you know, probably a whole lot more out of it. But that's, I'm kind of like you. You don't want to turn it into a job watching a TV show, right? So you've got like all this things. I want things to make sense to me, and I want to have like my aha moments, but I don't know how much time that I want to spend having to read a book or two to try to make sense of the episode.
Yeah, but I think you can pick your level of commitment to it.
Well, that's a good point.
Almost like exercise. You don't have to run a marathon. You can go out and take a walk and you still feel better. I mean, I like the mental stimulation of it, even though I'm not going to read Peter and the Wolf. I'm not going to go read the novel, the House of Special Purpose. But it's fun to think about. It's fun to like talk to a friend about it and kind of wonder what's going on and try to compare opinions and ideas and stuff.
Well, right, and I'm also sure that there's people out there that have read these books and have, you know, a more intimate knowledge of what they're talking about, which would then make this even more meaningful to them, make them be able to decipher even better.
And there's people out there that watch the show while they're making dinner, and then, oh, I got to go get the laundry from the laundry room. They walk away and come like, oh, that was fun. What do you want to watch next? They very skate on the very surface of it. You know, and they don't wonder like, oh, Peter and the Wolf. Well, that was meaningless. They don't even get into any of that. They just like the funny, that VM Varga guy looks pretty funny. And it's funny how they make silly comments about Nikki Swango and whatever. A stupid Corvette looks dumb in the snow.
Right.
Whatever you do when you don't suffocate yourself in these goddamn podcasts. You know what I'm saying, though. People like shoot them up, bang them up shows and don't even give it a second thought.
Yeah, I don't know. Fargo to me is, it's smart TV, but it doesn't have to be smart TV. Okay, like The Americans, you're not going to just watch an episode of The Americans out of nowhere, right? You're going to follow the story and you're going to do all that. Fargo, you could literally have not seen any of it and watch this, and I think it would be entertaining. Maybe not.
Yeah,
meaningful.
I don't know if I agree to that. I don't think people who watch Two Broke Girls watch The Americans or Fargo. Right? I think people who don't have to think that watch, like, quasi-attractive people make dangerous comments to each other and, you know, sexual innuendos and, you know, they get off on that. It's like superficial. You don't have to think anything about it. It's right there, right in front of you. It's like it's crystal clear and it's, you don't have to think a drop of an intellect, put a drop of intellect into it. These shows you got to work at. You got to work at The Americans. You got to kind of work at Fargo. Otherwise you call it stupid. No, that show's kind of stupid, kind of boring. You know, all they do is run around Washington spying on stuff. Every now and then somebody gets shoved into a suitcase. But you got to work at these shows.
Yeah, I think different people have different ideas of boring, too. A lot of people don't sit, because I've talked to people, you know, about, hey, I'm podcasting this show, and they're like, yeah, I tried to watch it, and, you know, I'm just not interested. It was just too much. You know, it was,
yeah,
you know, I didn't get the characters or whatever. They didn't want to invest any emotional energy into, or any brain cells into figuring this out. And I do think it's smart TV. Anybody who's watching this show and listening to the podcast are people that really do like smart TV, no doubt.
Yeah. I think. You could say that about The Leftovers, too. It's very deep, very, you gotta sit there and freaking figure it out and think about religious meanings and why would they do that? Why are they thinking that? Why is that guy writing the book of whatever? You know, it's deep. Almost Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad, you could maybe escape from that because that was kind of eye candy. You could watch that without having to get too deep into it. Although yeah. It let you get deep if you wanted to because it was very well written.
Right.
But you could watch that as just kind of, oh, cool, drug guys going out to Mexico and shooting and selling drugs and the lawyer helping getting them off. You know, you could think deep or shallow in that one and still enjoy it.
Yeah, there's definitely different levels. You've got your Walking Dead that's just like you were calling it, eye candy. And then you've got shows like this that it takes some thought. You can't doze in the middle of this and not miss something that's important.
Yeah, or Halt and Catch Fire. I mean, and look at the people looking at the audience of The Walking Dead. It was like 19 million per episode. So I think it's way down. It's like 11 or 12 million, but that's still huge. You know, Halt and Catch Fire would get 500,000 people per episode.
And Isn't that crazy?
I don't know what Fargo gets, but it doesn't get 11 million. I bet it, you know, might get 1 million. We should look that up next time. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
But Smarter gets less viewers. It's just kind of says something about society, I think.
Yeah, that's sad.
Like, what was the guy, what was the show with, what's his name? Charlie Sheen, 2.5 Men.
Yeah.
That show was pretty stupid, right? That had a huge following.
I never watched it.
I never watched it either.
Shows like Roseanne.
Yeah.
It was on for years and years and years and years, you know. And I don't know. I completely get watching TV as an escape. We watched a movie the other night called Prisoner. And if you ever want to be a nervous wreck during a movie, if you literally want like your stomach in a knot, it was a very good movie. But I completely get watching something just to escape, you know, just to have that entertainment factor. I do get that. I watch Survivor. I'm a big Survivor fan. And it's a lot on human interaction, which is one of the reasons that I really like Survivor. It's about how people play and manipulate one another, which is a fascinating topic to me. It also has like the survival kind of back end of it that is really cool to me. I like that and how far people will go to, you know, be number one. But it's easy to watch. It's just, other than that, if you don't want to like look into the human psyche, it's just entertainment.
Yeah, I never got into Survivor. I guess my dumbed down TV would be like sports. Like you watch a baseball game, what could be more stupid, right? Or a golf tournament or something like, oh, I wonder if he's going to get to second base. There's not a lot of depth in that, but it's brain. It's your brain on sort of taking a nap, you know?
Yeah. I think you need that sometime. I'm about ready for it after our 3-hour-long podcast this week.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is a pretty good take on whatever we could glean from this narrow escape. I think we escaped from it, Michelle.
I hope so. I mean, if anybody thinks we're completely crazy, I'd love to hear their take on it because I'm very unconfident at this point in my take on it.
So you're going to go to Amazon and look for the Cliff Notes of The House of Special Purpose so you can consume that before next Thursday.
Maybe we'll see what goes on. I've got a daughter getting married day after tomorrow, so I've got a lot going on for the next couple days, and then after that it should be calm. We'll see.
So Michelle, are you the bird, the duck, the cat, or the wolf?
Well, I'm not the wolf.
Or Peter. It could be Peter. Peter's the smart one, right? Peter's Gloria.
Peter's Gloria. I mean, I would like to think I'm Peter over the others, but I don't know. Who are you?
You got to say the wolf and Peter are probably equal. Probably the bird and the duck and the cat pretty equal. One can swim, one can fly, and one can kind of eat the other two. And the grandpa, I don't know. I'd like to think I'm on the upper level of that food chain, but who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, the grandpa, they don't make him very smart as he's portrayed in Fargo.
No, and he's kind of cowardly. He runs and hides from confrontations.
Yeah.
The other guys, the hunters, are just kind of mean. Mimo and Bimo or whatever the other guy is.
Yeah, Mimo and Yuri. Yeah, they're just hired guns.
They're muscle. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's see what happens in the House of Special Purpose.
Okay.
You'll be a mother-in-law then, huh? Another mother-in-law? New mother-in-law?
A new mother-in-law.
Mother from another mother-in-law.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeremy's really cool. I like him. So I'm excited about it. I just want all the stress of the wedding stuff. You know, I'm ready for the party now, right? We were out all day long today doing fun, but busy wedding stuff. And I'm just ready for the party and, to kick back.
Right on. All right. Well, have fun.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, Michelle. See you next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.